What's going on, everybody? Welcome to an episode of the Crawford Talks. I'm Jake Kaplan, Astros beat writer for The Athletic. Mike Meltzer joining me as always. Mike, it's been a while, 2 months, I believe. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and it's crazy, but we are literally on the eve of opening day, which I know you are invested in this world every single day, but it's still kind of crazy to me to think that we have gone from October to now and the baseball season is back.
Yeah, I don't really love the 3 days off before opening day.
That is kind
of
weird.
It kind of reminds me of last postseason when there was like the random 5 days off between rounds. But I appreciate everyone's patience with us. Obviously, we've gotten a lot of questions about when we were doing our next pod. It's, you know, I think it's safe to say it's become a more sporadic podcast than it was last year when we were twice a week. So just keep that in mind going forward. But we are definitely here, excited to be here today to preview the 2021 season after, I would say, an eventful spring training for the Astros as far as spring trainings go. I mean, usually they're pretty boring, and there was definitely some boring moments in this one, but a lot did happen,
especially who got a contract extension, Lance McCullers, who did not, Carlos Correa, at least up until this point. As far as the roster, by the way, any surprises with what the Astros are going into the season with pending COVID-19 protocols?
No. From a big picture standpoint, to start the spring, like, obviously, it's weird to not have Framber Valdez there and have Jake Odorizzi in his place in a week or two. But in terms of, you know, the 25-man, barring a decision on Luis Garcia and Brandon Belak in terms of who is going to be the starter and who is going to be the reliever, I hate to brag, but I think I'm going to be 25 for 25 in my last projection. So,
yep.
Full disclosure, I would have had Steve Cishek on Thursday before they released him, but, you know, that was clearly a luxury tax related move there.
All right, so let's dive into this as far as this season goes. And we can really pick any place to start, but I think we're going to begin here with the big questions. And I get the sense, Jake, that you have some questions about the starting pitching heading into this season. You mentioned Framber Valdez, who obviously the fear for about a week or two was that, oh man, could this guy miss the entire season? Then they go out and they sign Jake Odorizzi. All of a sudden, about a week after that, we find out the second opinion on Framber is a lot better. I don't know exactly when he's slated to return. I don't think there's been any commentary on that, but it does leave the rotation entering this season, considering Odorizzi is going to not be able to make, let's say, the first two turns in the rotation, in a question mark state.
Yeah, like, I think they have a good amount of good starting pitchers, but my question is, where are all of the innings going to come from over 162? Like, I think, especially when you consider the youth of their pitchers, like Jose Urquidy and Christian Javier, and the durability questions that have trailed Lance McCullers since 2016, Zach Greinke being 37, and Odorizzi, you know, he's been relatively durable. He's been pretty durable in his career for like a good 170 innings, 30 something starts, but he only made 4 starts last year. So all these guys are due for huge innings increases. And even in a normal year, when you're not coming off a 60 game season, teams use 10, 12 starters.
Yep.
So who are those guys? And I think really it's going to be a war of attrition, and the teams that do the best at covering the innings with depth, like the 8th to 10th starters, are going to be the best.
Well, especially in a situation where, if you look at the math on it, the Astros are likely going to be a high 80s, low 90s win team. And so you figure if you're going to use about 10 to 12 pitchers, then the differential in the American League West, a wild card, who knows, could come from those extra pitchers, those extra starters, and how well they do, you know, being able to fill those innings, right? Like, that's the kind, it's not like, hey, it's likely going to be a 98 win team, so what we're talking about here is like a luxury extra couple of games. Like, no, every game is going to be critical for this team to try to win back the division.
Right. It's not like, remember like July of 2019 when their division lead was safe. They were on pace for a million wins, and they could kind of not throw away games, but there was like a stretch where they had three starters for like a month. It was like, it was just like biding time for the trade deadline for the, trade to happen.
Even in 2017, there was that month when Mike Fiers had to essentially carry the starting rotation. Mm-hmm. And you kind of compare it to where it is now. Yeah, I think you're 100% right. There are a lot of questions, and especially framed against the loss of Framber Valdez. I don't know about you, but heading into 2021, my thought was Greinke, inconsistent. You know, McCullers, a question mark. Javier, he's dealing with the dynamic of coming back off of a promising rookie season, but one that was literally 2 months long. Framber Valdez, and maybe I'm extrapolating too much, Jake, based off of, again, only 2 months last year, but he felt like the guy that they would be able to rely on as like the two or three starter who he was a workhorse last season. Like they could throw, at the very least, he would give them a lot of innings. Like of all five or now six of these guys, I'd feel most confident about Framber over the 162, and he is the guy they lost.
Yeah, the way Dusty used him last year, he was not afraid to throw him out there for the seventh inning, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas other guys, he would put in the bullpen. So they definitely talked about that rubber arm aspect of Valdez, and you know, it does sound like Valdez will be back at some point. It's going to be a while. I don't think it's anytime soon, but you know, I guess you could kind of think of that as part of the depth once he does come back. I just don't know who else it's going to be. I think Luis Garcia is pretty good. I think Brandon Belak could be okay if he you know, figures out his pitch usage and you know, he was really fastball happy last year, and that's what hurt him. And his slider did look better in spring training, so maybe there's something there. But even beyond those guys, they need more. Like, I just don't know, you know, where the innings are to come from. And I think that goes for the bullpen too, especially in the wake of their decision to, you know, save money and not add money and cut Steve Cishek. There's no depth out of the top eight who made the bullpen. Like, you know, until Austin Pruitt and Josh James comes back, or Andre Scrub and Pedro Baez come back from the IL, like, you know, there's I don't think they're that much deeper than they were last year.
I agree with that. Do you think there's a world in which Jose Urquidy can play the same role that I was just describing with Framber Valdez?
Yeah. But I don't know if you saw this.
Eno Saris had as one of his bold predictions on The Athletic that Urquidy gets Cy Young votes.
Yeah, and I do buy into like the Urquidy breakout potential. Like, he's really, you know, I feel like it would have been last year if he didn't have COVID and it kind of derailed his more than his first half. He didn't debut till September 5th, I want to say. He's really good and he's really consistent. I just don't know if he's going to pitch too deep into games. And that's the same with Javier. Like, Javier, you know, is good for his five innings, but how deep is he going to pitch? So I
wondered that more with Javier than Urquidy for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, Urquidy has four pitches, right? Javier is more of like fastball slider. Like, I think that's it. But,
and we did see, you know, I'm just going back through last season. Urquidy made his debut in that game against the Angels on September the 5th. In the last four starts he made in the regular season, he went six innings, seven innings. Again, it's a month of baseball, but I didn't feel like Javier was going that deep into games last year.
Right. No, he wasn't. I think he's kind of a five and dive for the most part.
I think we agree.
And now they really need Greinke to be the good version, right?
Yes.
Like, he looked like he ran out of gas last year, and I don't know what to make of anything he does in spring training. I don't know what to make of anything anyone does in spring training. I think it's going to be interesting. I think they have the best rotation in their division, I think, but I don't know. I haven't studied the depth of the other teams. And also, like, this whole like luxury tax thing is going to loom over them all year. If they truly are like going to refuse to go over it and add payroll, like, how are they going to improve their team throughout the season?
So let's talk about that before we get back into, I want to talk about Greinke for a little bit as well.
Okay.
Can you tell the audience, Jake, what are the numbers with luxury tax? How close are they to that threshold? And why is there such a fear of going over it? I believe there are some significant penalties attached, not just monetary, but also maybe draft pick wise.
Yeah. So it depends on which site you like. I like Roster Resource, which is attached to FanGraphs. And they have the Astros' estimated luxury tax payroll right now at $208 million. And the threshold is $210 million. I don't think the Odorizzi signing was part of the plan until Framber Reed got hurt. And they were hoping to kind of save that money or that space for the trade deadline. And now that's, you know, now that space is gone. They can it's not calculated like until the end of the season. So they could theoretically subtract players throughout the year, which is kind of not ideal for a team that's trying to win. I think it's less about the monetary tax and more about the draft pick compensation.
I agree.
So, like, for example, when the Astros lost Gerrit Cole after giving him a qualifying offer, they gained a pick after the second round, which was in the 70s. But because they went over the tax threshold in 2020, when they lost George Springer to free agency, they got a pick after the fourth round. So it's a difference of two rounds. They obviously have Correa as a potential qualifying offer candidate. I think Verlander is a qualifying offer candidate potentially.
Yeah.
And also it impacts if you sign a player who got a qualifying offer from another team. So say Correa walks and they sign
Trevor Story.
I was going to say Trevor Story, but like if he gets traded, he's not eligible to get a qualifying offer.
Yeah.
So like say they signed a pitcher, say Noah Syndergaard gets a qualifying offer and they sign him.
It evens out.
Well, no, then they have to give up more in draft capital and international money than they would have if they hadn't exceeded the tax threshold. So it's, you know, I think you could easily argue that it's not worth hindering your chances to win now when this might be your best chance to win in a while. But it's like a long-term outlook type thing. And, you know, the thing all along has been trying to build a sustainable winner. So it's, I think that's the thinking, but so, you know, thinking changes throughout the year too, right? Like they weren't planning to go over the luxury tax before either. And then they did the Greinke trade, you know, like you can get kind of excited and excitable during a year when you're, you see the standings and the chance you have in front of you, you might be more willing to do something.
Well, I think the other thing is, sometimes it's important to frame things the right way, the way that we're thinking about them. And so what you mentioned, Jake, is true. Their plan obviously was not to sign Jake Odorizzi. That clearly, based on the circumstances, was based on what happened with Framber Valdez and the giant hole that created in rotation. Let's say that had never happened. Could we have seen the Astros have, like, would that have been the kind of move they would have made in July of this year, adding someone like Odorizzi? So now it just happened much earlier in the process. Now then you can say, okay, is Odorizzi really a big enough signing to be the right kind of addition? That remains to be seen, but you could look at this and say, instead of making a trade deadline deal in July, they made that move in March instead. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just don't think we have the attention span to think that way. Like,
Definitely don't.
No one was saying like, oh, Yuli Gurriel was an offseason signing. You know what I mean? But it really, like the Astros were probably looking at it that way. Like,
yes,
it happened right before the playoffs, an extension for 1 year. And so when we're talking about their quiet offseason for December and the first half of January, you know, we're not saying, oh, but they signed Gurriel. Like, you know, we just don't think that way.
Yes. I just want to throw it out there.
No, I think it's smart. When we come to July 31st, and if the Astros don't do anything, I don't think that's going to play too well.
Yeah. By the way, your move was actually Odorizzi. So which version of Greinke do we get? I don't know what to expect. I tend to agree with something you wrote, Jake, which is he's more of a two or even three starter. Last year was up and down. he started shaky. Then it looked like he might be in contention for the Cy Young. Then he faded down the stretch. And then in the playoffs, it was a little bit touch and go, but he did enough for them. They won all three games in which he pitched, which is nice, obviously. But it's not ideal for him to try to carry a rotation at this stage, nor do I think that's like a fair expectation.
I mean, he's 37. Like, I mean, the stuff's cool. Like, his velocity is clearly not what it used to be. He continues to evolve. And I guess there's maybe he has a trick up his sleeve for this year. But I think it's a big question that people aren't really talking about that much. Because of how he finished last year. And, you know, we also maybe have to be careful of not projecting too much based off 2020 seasons, but even in 2019, Greinke was pretty inconsistent after the trade to the Astros.
I'm looking at the FanGraphs projections on Greinke. They project an ERA of 4.05. He'll throw 186 innings and start 31 games.
What do you think? I mean, the 186 innings might be the most important part of that, right? Like, that would... Mm-hmm. It's almost like you live with the four just to get to the cover that workload.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, you'd like to see the ERA a little bit lower. That feels like that might be a little bit above, maybe around the league average. But yeah, those innings, as we were discussing, would be critical.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's going to be really interesting to follow this year. You know, especially being his last year before free agency again. Like, I don't know, his market will be really interesting in the offseason. He can't get a qualifying offer because he got one from the Dodgers after 2015. I don't know. Greinke's it's always interesting to follow him and hear what he has to say after his starts.
Yeah, and I think that there's a more realistic possibility that Lance McCullers, if he can stay healthy and put it all together, is a higher caliber starting pitcher this year than Greinke, just based on the pretty massive age difference of 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, stuff-wise...
he's got better stuff right now.
Yeah, and he's had stretches where he's been that guy. It just hasn't been consistent or you know... Over the course of his career, he's 10% better than the league average by ERA. There's been stretches where he's been better than that and stretches where he's been worse than that. You know, and obviously the durability thing is still there. But yeah, I mean, he looked like their best starter in spring training.
So he looked that good.
Yeah. Yeah. People were raving about how he looked. But it's also spring training, and who knows what that means.
By the way, I'm looking at these FanGraphs projections, and some of these numbers are kind of scary. They've got Javier and ERA of 5.10 and Urquidy at 4.81. I feel like that would not be a promising development for the rotation.
No, not at all. That would probably get Javier pushed to the bullpen, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I mean, listen, this goes back to my thing on Fromber. Like, if they could have Fromber in there in between Lance and Javier, or as the second starter, however they would want to do it, I would just feel much better about the overall state of the rotation, because I feel like I'd be able to rely enough on Fromber to be able to at least pitch a good number of innings. Plus, I'm optimistic about Urquidy, so I feel like, yeah, you're in solid shape with the rotation. Now, especially with Odorizzi being, you know, gone for those first two turns of the rotation, more question marks heading into the season.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, I guess the counter argument would be, find me a team that doesn't have similar questions, except for maybe the Dodgers, who have like three starters in their bullpen.
yeah.
But it's just like where, like, I think teams really don't know how they're going to do this, like, all around. Like, this is obviously unprecedented, going from 60 games to 162, and we're already seeing injuries around the game. So, you know, it's going to be a fascinating season.
It is going to be a fascinating season. I totally agree, because you're coming off of, you know, a 2-month season. And so this is going to be an issue essentially everywhere. The bullpen, I think a lot of this really depends. Well, it depends on a couple of things. What Ryan Presley do we get? which is a similar dynamic to Zach Greinke. Do we get the Ryan Presley who was dominant in the first couple of months of the 2019 season? Do we get the guy who has been injury prone and last year people had to hold their breath when he was in there, especially towards the end of the season? The Astros have promising younger relievers in Anoli Paredes and Blake Taylor and such. But relievers historically in Major League Baseball from year to year can vacillate a lot when it comes to their production, right? And yeah. So I could envision a world in which Anoli and Taylor got good experience. They continue to get better. You add back in Joe Smith. They got something from Brooks Raley. Ryan Presley stabilizes, and all of a sudden you have one of the better bullpens in baseball, but I could also see it going the other way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I actually am pretty high on Ryan Presley. I think based on what people are saying and the way he's talking about how he feels, and I mean, there was one or two of his outings on TV, not a lot, very small sample, but it just seems like the further he gets from this 2019 knee surgery, the better he's going to be. And his mechanics were off last year and they're back now. And actually, I don't know if he'll be first half 2019 dominant, because that was like literally giving up nothing. But maybe second half 2018 when they first got him, like, and he was really good. I think he's going to be good. I have more questions about the rest of the bullpen. I think.
Okay.
Anoli Paredes, Blake Taylor, those guys had good rookie seasons, but now there's fans in the stands. How does that change yes. things? Taylor also kind of petered out toward the end. He walked too many guys. Joe Smith, I don't know what version of Joe Smith they're going to get, because he hasn't pitched since 2019. You know, his 2018, when he was kind of on and off the IL, wasn't very good. His 2019 was great. So kind of, you know, like to what you said about relievers being their performance being, I guess, volatile, like you don't know for sure. Brooks Raley, you know, not a huge track record. Ryan Stanek, not a huge track record. And then some kids. Like, I actually think Andre Scrub was going to be like, you know, the way he looked in spring training was going to be like a high leverage guy from the get-go.
Interesting.
And Pedro Baez, obviously, they signed him to be a leverage guy.
I got the sense in reading your coverage, Jake, that it didn't seem as though Brian Abreu was pitching all that well relative for a guy who's going to make this team. Was that the correct feeling that I got?
I don't think he was supposed to make the team. I think he was supposed to be in the alternate site, but the C-Shack, the injuries and the C-Shack thing pushed him onto the team. Like, I think he's fine. His breaking ball doesn't seem to be all the way there yet, and his fastball control is still an issue. People were excited after he threw a few good innings in his second-to-last start against the Mets, but he was facing, like, the Mets backups. So, like, you know, I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on that. But
Abreu, we've talked about him a lot relative for his role, but this is a guy who, remember, made the playoff roster in 2019 based on how well he was pitching when he came up from the minors. And then last season was just an abomination, essentially. And this year you're going in and it's kind of like, all right, is he all the way back? Doesn't really sound like that's the case. And with all these innings you're going to need to fill, yeah, it's fine to have the idea that he's going to fill only low leverage innings, but how likely is that to stay? You know, it kind of feels like they're going to run through enough guys to where, if you're in that bullpen, you're going to have to try to get some key outs even early in the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess like there's a chance, especially early in the year, that there's some lopsided games because of like how weird this all is and coming off of last year and, you know, the preparation, like pitchers being ahead of hitters and who knows. But like, you know, and you could use either Abreu or the loser of the Garcia Belak guy to just like wear it for a game, but Abreu's also not like a sure thing to throw enough strikes to go five innings, like if you needed him to just like mop up.
I agree.
So I don't know. I think he'll be up and down throughout the year. I think who else will be up and down throughout the year? Stanek is an option and wasn't super impressive in spring training. I think he'll be an up and down guy. You know, whoever the Belak Garcias, those guys will be up and down. So they're really counting on Paredes, Taylor, Smith, Raley, Scrub, Baez, yes, in front of Presley. And I mean, you can say that's about every reliever every year, but I just don't know exactly what any of those guys are going to be. They might be better. They might be worse. They might be the same. I don't know. I think their bullpen's more of a question than I thought it was coming into spring training.
Jake, how long is Andre Scrub going to be out?
It doesn't sound like too long. Okay. I think it's a short-term thing. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the lineup. One threshold question I have going into the year. Is Yordan ramped up enough to where he's going to be good being in the lineup every single day?
I think they'll give him some days off, but he's played full games now. He's played back-to-back days. So for the most part, yeah. I think they're going to have to be careful with Alvarez and Brantley and just like giving one of them a day off here, another day off there, just to keep them both for the long haul.
I feel good about the lineup. I expect Altuve to be better than last season. I expect Bregman to be better than last season. I think we could have Correa having an excellent year. Alvarez, if he stays healthy, I expect to play well. I'm a little bit iffy about his health until I see it. One concern I have going in, Jake, is I could envision a world in which like the worst three hitters in the lineup like really hurt them. What does Yuli have left? Is Miles Straw going to actually get on base? Martin Maldonado's a catcher. He's got a little pop and hit some line drives all over the place, but you know, he's a catcher. He's not a good hitter. So there is a little bit of a feeling for me with this lineup that it should be very good, one of the best in baseball, but that there will be some holes, especially, you know, 7, 8, 9, depending on how it shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think they're going to go as far as their lineup takes them, right? Like kind of like last year. So. I agree. Altuve is going to be better. I think Bregman and Alvarez both have potential to be top 10 hitters by OPS in the majors. I think Correa is going to be better. I don't know if this is the year when he puts it all together and it's the MVP type season, or he's just merely better than he was last year. Brantley, pretty steady performer. Tucker, I could see some regression just because of how good he was last year, but I think he's going to be pretty solid. Gurriel, I have no idea. Like, absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
He's, what, 36, 37, and he was really bad last season.
Especially in the ALCS.
Yeah, his contract extension still kind of confuses me.
How so?
Like, guaranteeing him that money before free agency started, everyone was anticipating it being a tough market for older players and kind of the middle class. Yep. Like, I don't think he gets 7 on the open market. I just was surprised they committed to him there instead of just waiting it out and seeing where it ended up. Because like I mean they are better at analyzing like the underlying data than I am, but what did you see last year that gives you confidence he's going to be back to 2019 form this year?
Nothing specific other than maybe it was some kind of fluke, I suppose, and that he wore down at the end of last season, although that doesn't really sound good now that I'm saying it. I'm looking at the market for first baseman. It's always hard compared to like NFL contracts because these guys are like, you know, all over the place when it comes to where their status is, essentially second deal, first deal arbitration. He's the 13th highest paid first baseman in baseball, which seems a little bit high. I do wonder like how they calculated that. And maybe like you always see guys being signed for like in the $2 to $3 million range or so, like the Mitch Moreland types. Right. And maybe they could have gone in that. I'm not even saying him specifically, but just like in that general direction. Instead, they go 1 for 6. Yeah, that's one that we can look at.
The Taylor Jones hive is out here waiting for a mention.
Yes, yes, good point. That's your guy. maybe the fact that they like Yuli, he's obviously been around for a while. He's still very, very good defensively. maybe that factors in. But yeah, I could see on a strict accounting basis how you might say, why did they give Yuli Gurriel a year and $6 million compared to the market? It's a very fair question.
Yeah, I guess they're counting on the fact that he was out of shape last year. Obviously, a lot of players were negatively impacted by having the shutdown, and he's in better shape now, and maybe he's back to normal. I just think it's a big question. Probably the biggest question in our lineup is the Gurriel question.
Yeah, because you truly have no idea what you're going to get. I mean, with Kyle Tucker, there are some questions. It was last year for real, but he has enough of a prospect history and just a player development, you know, sort of angle to it, to where you'd feel like, okay, he's not going to be awful based on his progression from last season. And even like Miles Straw, like that's a question, but Miles Straw is not going to become, you know, George Springer. Like that's not going to happen. And so you have a feeling of what Straw is going to be. Yuli, you could see this going 1,000 different ways at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think the Straw obviously is a question, but like, I don't have as many questions as I think others, just like, cause he's hitting eighth, right? Like he's not, yeah. I don't know. Like they don't need a ton of offense from their 8-hole hitting center fielder, who's an upgrade defensively over George Springer. Maybe not a huge one, but he is a better defender than Springer. His speed allows him to make up for some, you know, bad jobs, bad reads that he might make. It's elite speed. He's going to steal some bases. If he plays offensively like he did in 2019 when he was playing part-time, he'll be fine.
That makes sense to me. I like, what's a good on base percentage for Miles Straw this season? Like, what would they take?
340?
Yeah, I'd sign for 340. Absolutely.
What was he in 2019? I'm looking real quick. He was 378, but that's probably high. Yeah, I would. His career is 327 in the majors. I would say 340.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, 2019 was 108 at bats, so obviously you'll increase that sample a lot more. Yeah, I think 340 you would take, because that's gonna give enough opposing pitchers some trouble on the base paths, because once he gets on there, it completely changes the dynamic of the offense.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting with him to me is the fan perception that he's not a good defender. I don't know.
Is that the fan perception?
It seems to be, based on like comments on my story. Whenever I write that he is an upgrade over Springer defensively, people say, no, you're wrong. I think he maybe had a few bad plays last year that led to that perception. So I'll be really curious to follow the defensive metrics for him now that we're going to have like a meaningful sample size.
Yeah. One point that you made in one of your previews is the Astros are going to rely a lot on their starting outfielders to carry. Like, you're not going to see too many days off. I guess Brantley would obviously have the most based on age. You know, you've got Aledmys Diaz who can fill in. I don't know how much Chaz McCormick is going to play, but I agree with your instinct that it's going to be a lot of Brantley and Tucker and Straw early on.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could see McCormick spell one of the corner guys against a lefty like Lizardo or Puck. There are a few decent amount of lefties in the AL West now that I think about it. But yeah, I think, you know, I mean, like, Brantley and Tucker are so valuable. And he can play center, but he's not really a center fielder. He's more of a corner guy. So, like, it's kind of Straw and Straw there in center field. So
yes,
it's going to be a lot of those three for sure.
What about Abraham Toro? Any surprise with him?
No, I mean, I think he's good enough to be like, he's a better player than Robel Garcia, but like, I think their thinking is like, what good does it do his career to just have him play like very sparingly on the bench?
Yeah.
Whereas Garcia's already that guy, right? Like he is what he is. Whereas Toro might be an everyday player for someone down the road.
Okay.
I don't know. Dusty was hyping up Toro's spring.
Well, Dusty
Monday.
Loves Toro.
Yeah. I mean, he did look, you know, from all accounts, look better, but he was also pretty bad last year, so that's not exactly a high bar. So I think he's still a good prospect, even though we don't think of him as a prospect. Doesn't really have a place with the Astros, it would seem. But, you know, Maybe him playing every day in AAA helps his trade value. Maybe someone gets hurt and they need him. Maybe he can play first if Gurriel doesn't get it done. I don't know. I think it's smart to, you know, not, he's only 24 and not everyone's cut out for like the part-time bench role deal.
Yeah, that logic made sense to me, that if there's a feeling that Toro could be more than he is, why not give him consistent bats to the minors? I'm cool with that up until they might need a better at bat to spell some of these guys. Let's talk about contracts, Jake, because that was a big theme of the last week. So Carlos Correa does not get a contract. Correa got a contract offer. It was lousy, $120 million over 6 years. He obviously doesn't sign it. And Correa, the most, the most outspoken and honest member of the Houston athlete stratosphere, said he thought the offer was really low. If that's how they feel about me, I guess I'll go out and play and try to win another championship for the city of Houston and then explore free agency. My take on it is, Jake, if I were the Astros, I would not have made this offer because there's no chance in the world that he would have accepted it. And I'm not like an expert negotiator. I'm working on becoming a better one, but I'm not going to offer somebody a deal that I feel like they're just not going to take.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I also think that there's probably part of it where they wanted to make a offer just so they could say to the fans that they made an offer, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if what's better, a bad offer or an offer? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
let's say you and I were running the team. I would say, like, here are the numbers. So $20 million is highway robbery. $30 million is probably what he wants, average annual value. So I would sit there and say, okay, let's put a number. Like, if I believe in Correa long term, which is, if I didn't believe in him long term, then I wouldn't even be having this conversation. Then it would be really awkward. But my thought, Jake, would be, all right, let's put a deal in front of him that's like average annual value, $24-25 million, to where he's probably not going to take it, but it might make him think, just because it's a large amount of money over X amount of years. That's what I would have done.
Yeah. I think the years are a big part of this, right? Like, okay, he's going to be so young. Like, it's really rare that a player gets to be a free agent at his age. So he's got to take advantage of that, right?
Like, yes.
He can't squander that. And a six-year deal would be squandering that. George Springer just got a six-year deal, and he's 5 years older than him.
Good
point. So, like, a six-year deal for a 26, 27-year-old takes him into no man's land for the second contract, right? So,
yep.
He's basically got to get two contracts in one, almost, to take advantage of the age factor. So, yeah, I mean, I think the low point offer would probably be 8 years, right? So what's your offer? 8 years times 24, 25? What does that come out to?
That would be my offer. Yeah, somewhere around there.
So Mike Meltzer offers 8 years, $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he probably turns it down. And he probably should turn it down, but for somebody who's only played over 111 games one time, it's a defensible offer.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's defensible.
I think that's fair. But like, we're at the same place now, so it's more of a perception thing, right? Like,
of course, yeah. Yeah. Well, but I just think that like like 6 years, 120, like I don't even have it, like none of us have near this kind of money. But I feel like if you just transplanted me in Correa's shoes, like, I'm not taking that deal. Like, I can't take that deal. There's no way.
No, he'd be shortchanging himself if he took that deal, for sure. I mean, like, if he has a good year this year and he plays 150 games.
Yes.
He is like, I mean, he's looking at like a Manny Machado type deal, I think. Like,
absolutely.
I don't see why not, because there's such recency bias in contracts, right? Like, I don't know. Like, I think the closest comp would be like Gerrit Cole's walk year in that scenario.
This is such a hard negotiation, because there is the perception of what Correa is, what he can be, and Correa has so much talent, and he also has gotten a lot better defensively, to where I remember when Bregman came up, my thought was like, oh, he's probably a better shortstop than Correa. These guys should probably be like flip-flop, but they're not going to do that because Correa's number one pick. He got here earlier, and now it's like, no. Correa is basically an elite defensive shortstop. He's gotten better. Last year, offensively, in the regular season, was disappointing. He has not stayed healthy. And yet, on the other hand, He has been a clutch postseason performer, whatever you take from that or not. He has become, in the last year, sort of the leader, kind of the heart and soul guy of the team. And yet I have to almost be like an actuary on this with this contract, because I look at the games played and I'm like, if I'm going to give you $250 to $320 million, which is what it's going to take, like, you got to play more games. I mean, you just, right. You have to play more games. And I think a lot of what I see, and people will be upset at me who are listening to this, but a lot of what I see on Astros Twitter, like, I almost feel like no fans are acknowledging this. Like, this is a really hard negotiation. Jose Altuve, who signed that deal, he plays full seasons. Alex Bregman, I know he's had some hamstring stuff, but like, Bregman's been a pretty consistent player who plays a lot of games. This Correa negotiation is not an easy one.
Right, and plus you throw in the fact that one injury came up twice, right? The back injury was in two different seasons.
Yep.
Yeah, I think if it would be a little easier had he performed in the last regular season too. Like, I think that even makes it even harder. Like, he was below average in the 2020 regular season. Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, if he has a really good year, he's going to get paid a ton of money, get a ton of years, you know, especially if the Astros are in the playoffs and make a playoff run. Like, it's kind of like when a player has a huge walk year, it really does matter a ton, especially if, like, when the owners are involved, because they get excited to see what Garrett Cole did in the 2019 playoffs, for example. Like, that, you know, that gets you a lot of extra money at the end. So like, Correa is going to do really well for himself if he has a good year. If he doesn't, it's going to be really interesting to see where he lands. But based on like the fact that he stayed healthy last year in the 60 game season, and he looks good in spring training, and he says he feels great, or he says he feels sexy, as he likes to say, you know, I think he'll have a good year. It's just a matter of how good, and then what's the market? Is Lindor on the market? Because if he's not, if Lindor signs with the Mets this week, then that helps Correa.
How surprised were you, Jake, that the Astros gave Lance McCullers $85 million for 5 years?
Very surprised. I was not surprised that they extended Lance McCullers. I was surprised at the terms. I don't know. I was expecting like when the reports came out that they were talking, my prediction was like, in my head, was like 3 years, somewhere between 30 and 40.
Wait, run that by me again.
So like, when the reports came out that they were talking, in my head, I was thinking like a three year extension with like an AAV of like 10 to 12 million.
Wow. Okay. So this was a really different contract than the one you were expecting.
Yeah. I might've been underestimating the age factor. Similar to Correa, McCullers is super young for an impending free agent. So that helps him. But, given the team's history with pitchers, and they don't sign pitchers to long-term deals, I didn't expect that McCullers, would be the guy to break that mold.
And I think the age has such a big role in that. I always think about free agency and re-signing your own players, and I think about the way baseball is set up, which I think is pretty unfair for the players. George Springer gets 6 years, $150 million for the Blue Jays, but I think we can all realistically project that the Astros got the most out of Springer. Like, I'm sure he'll play well the next 3 years, but the best part of his career, just based on age, is going to come in Houston. With Lance McCullers, there's a really good argument to be made that, especially starting this season, 2 years after Tommy John, that the best years of his career might be from age 27 to 32. So from that standpoint, I understand the gamble that they made, but I can't in good conscience say, hey guys, this Correa extension is like a really tricky negotiation, and not point out the same thing with McCullers. I do understand the bet that James Click and Jim Crane made on this, in that he is a really talented pitcher. He has the most serious arm injury theoretically behind him at this point. And Lance is the kind of guy who has become, not that he hasn't been a smart pitcher, but has become a wiser, smarter pitcher, in that he's different than he was in 2015 and 2016. You can see some evolution there with the changeup. Basically, I'm rambling, but I'm basically saying I could see a scenario where, like, okay, now the best part of Lance's career is here, And because pitching is so valuable, they're making this bet on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is what they did. It's a great deal for McCullers.
Great deal, yes.
Because, like, I don't know. So, like, I guess the timing is what threw me off a little bit with the length. Because if McCullers plays out this season, has, like, the best case scenario season, let's call it, like, a 3-2 ERA in 180, is he getting much more than this in free agency?
Unless he had, if he had a great season, maybe he could get over $100 million. But it didn't seem like they took much of a discount for getting this deal done early, right?
Right. Which is like you made a great point with the Correa stuff. Like it is the same. It is a similar thing. Like McCullers hasn't pitched a full major league season.
Yep.
He's had stretches of dominance. You know, he's a fan favorite like Correa.
Yep.
Which I think does matter in these talks. I don't know. It is interesting. Like it's almost like they paid McCullers assuming he was going to have like the best case scenario season, but they offered Correa like he was going to have the worst case scenario season.
Yeah, that's the weird part. Like why would their evaluation of Correa and McCullers be so different? That's a fundamental question.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, so McCullers got 5 years, $85 million. They offered Correa 1 year more, and
yeah,
I can't do math, but what's that, 40 difference? I don't know.
30. Yeah, basically. So
Dusty Baker said I was good at 35? Math the other day, but he was wrong.
I saw somebody point out during the offseason that if McCullers, remember that one awful inning against Arizona where it seemed like they were hitting like doubles or home runs off of like basically every pitch. So if not for that inning, his ERA would have gone from 3.93. Technically, it's the whole start, but 3.93 to 2.81 in 2020. I don't know how much that does for you, but if we remove that one bizarre start in Arizona, he would have had a 2.81 ERA last season.
You know, if we removed all that DoorDash that I ordered during the pandemic, I would have 10 fewer pounds on me right now and feel a lot better about myself. So
it was only one start, Jake. It was one bad start.
He also had that weird Anaheim start where he gave up some runs and didn't get an out and had like the nerve neck issue. So I guess you could play that game with a couple different starts of his.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. All right, let's get to win totals and what we are expecting here. So we're going to do win totals, and we're going to predict the division from 1 through 5. So I think I know less than Jake. Let's all be honest here. So I'm going to
isn't that a band name?
Say that again.
Isn't that a band name? Less than Jake.
Less than Jake. It's possible.
I think it is. Yeah.
It sounds like a band name.
I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. So I'm gonna give you my projection on win total. I think the Astros are gonna win 88 games. I predicted this on a different podcast that I do as well. And so I looked this morning, like FanGraphs also as an 88. So I feel like I'm lame in doing that, but that's what it feels like to me. I think this lineup has a chance to be really excellent, especially if they are able to get big performances from Altuve, Bregman, and especially Correa in a contract year if Alvarez stays healthy. But I have enough questions about the starting rotation in the bullpen to where I'm not going to carry it to like 93, 94. I don't think there are going to be many teams in Major League Baseball winning in the 90s this season. I think the Astros will be neck and neck to win the AL West, and I'll go with 88 based on some of the questions I have.
I like it. I'm going to go 89, so right there with you. I think I think this division is going to be decided by which of the three contenders cleans up the most on the Rangers and the Mariners.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like those teams are going to be bad, and especially the Rangers, they are going to be dreadful. And so whichever team takes advantage of those matchups the best and at the highest rate will probably win the division, I think.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So how they do against those? Are the Mariners going to be that bad this season again? Shouldn't they be a little bit better?
They were good last year. I mean, relatively.
They were, yeah.
Think that was kind of fluky. I think they're going to be pretty bad. Yeah.
Okay, fair. Okay, so let's do the division. So just real quick. So as far as what happened in the offseason, so the A's lost Liam Hendricks, Marcus Semien. Anybody else big that I'm missing from the A's? I think those were the those
Tommy
were the
big LaStella, ones. Robbie Grossman, one other hitter I think I'm forgetting. The lineup is the big losses. Like, their lineup now is not very deep. They lost some other bullpen guys, but they also added some bullpen guys. So
they did.
Their pitching is still pretty good, I think. But for me, the offense is the question.
Okay, so you think the offense is the question. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, they're going to be playing Elvis Andrews, it sounds like, pretty consistently.
Jed Lowry.
Yeah, Jed Lowry. Yeah, that's a question. I mean, the Angels, on the flip side, have the opportunity to have a really good offense, but their pitching, as always, is a major question mark.
Yeah, I think it's better, though. Like, it's not a joke. Like, it's decent. Like, Alex Cobb, Jose Quintana are fine. Like, it's,
yeah,
they have, like, Griffin Canning is a good young pitcher if he can stay healthy. Otani's back if he can stay healthy.
Yes.
Dylan Bundy was really good last year. Like, they have bona fide major league starters now. It's not like you're just like, it's not like guys you've never heard of.
Yep. They added Iglesias in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think their bullpen's better. I actually like what their GM, their new GM's done. And they just added Steve Cishek and Tony Watson and James Hoyt, former Astro.
Yeah, that's right. James Hoyt.
This week, like, they've made over their bullpen at the end of spring training. So
the Steve Cishek revenge tour.
Yeah, starting next week. Yeah.
Starting next week. All right, so let's do division projections. First place, I'll say the Astros squeak it and win the division and they reclaim the division championship from the A's.
I agree. I have the Astros edging out the Angels, who I have in second.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Angels too. I was thinking about going with the A's, but I look at this lineup. You've sold me a little bit on this Angels starting rotation. At least they have viable options. I still think this Ohtani thing is just like I'm getting kind of bored of it.
you want him to just be an outfielder? Or DH?
Yeah, just hit. Thank you. Just hit every day. Like, I'm cool with that. But they have enough viable options and guys that we have seen pitch decently that I'll say, yeah, I'll say that the Angels, based on Oakland's losses, will finish in second place. I think it'll be pretty tight, 1-3.
So we're going to have the same order.
Yeah,
Astros,
I think so. So we're going to have
Angels, A's, Mariners, Rangers.
Yeah, I think we will. We will. Yes.
I mean, there's case for the Rangers being anything but fifth.
Like, yeah, what's the big story? I saw that Odor is not going to make the team.
Yeah, Odor is out.
This reminds me that the most overrated thing ever was Odor punching Batista. It drove me nuts how big of a deal people in Dallas made of that stupid thing. It's like he basically sucker punched the guy who wasn't expecting it. It's like, oh my God, he's Muhammad Ali. Like, what are we doing here? Like, that Odor thing just drove me nuts.
He's 20. He just turned 27. That's crazy.
That is crazy. That is crazy.
He debuted at age 20.
Wow. I'm looking at the lineup. I haven't even like heard of like three of these guys that they're going to have in their starting lineup.
And that's before they trade guys at the deadline. So,
yeah. Rotation of Kyle Gibson, who had pitched well at times last year.
It's not it's not what you want for opening a new stadium.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. It's not what you want for opening a new stadium. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're in agreement. I think we're probably picking close to chalk. I think some people would probably have the A's over the Angels at second, but we're playing the odds.
We are playing the odds, most certainly. All right. So we will, again, the podcast has not been as regular, but we will have episodes during the course of the season. Again, Jake goes with 89 wins. I go with 88. We both have the same projected finish in the American League West, and we see how right or wrong we are over the course of these next 6 months. For Jay Kaplan, make sure you check out his work on The Athletic every single day. I'm Mike Meltzer. This has been the latest episode of The Crawford Talks, an Astros podcast brought to you by The Athletic.